Folks, welcome back to Dub After. This is Chris once again. Hello, folks. Welcome back to Chris White Africa here on the Daba Africa Broadcasting Network, the IBN Daba Broadcasting Network. Pleasure to have you once again today, the 2nd of May, 2021. I will bring you now the Daba Africa news of the day. Let's start with the headlines. Cyril Ramaphosa remains in the headlines just a few days after his Academy Award-winning performance or portrayal as the president of South Africa before the Zondo State Capture Commission. In an award-winning performance, he's getting accolades from some corners. As South Africa moves to confiscate yet more income and wealth from the talented and successful, the country is losing its millionaires in droves. The ranks of its millionaires have declined and dwindled by 4,200 in the past decade alone. A draft promotion of equity and prevention of unfair discrimination. Sorry, it's a mouthful to swallow that. The Draft Promotion of Equity and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act is an Orwellian mind control exercise by the government of South Africa. No, this is not alternative loopy radio. I'll explain when we get to the story. Petrol or petroleum in South Africa is in an all-time high. This by government that 30 years ago complained that high petrol prices at the time, which were remarkably low by today's standards, were racist. So what are these record high petrol prices today by the ruling African National Congress? Are they too racist? Bear in mind that the government of South Africa sets the price of petroleum. It's not a free market activity. It is a government-controlled price point. Shameful. 65% of all of the price of petrol goes into the coffers of the state. So people are paying over 100% more than they have to for a liter of petrol in South Africa. Among the winners in the pandemic that's now spread for some time, I've told you repeatedly that there are winners and losers in every crisis. And of course, there are winners here. There are political leftists who've won all over the planet. There are pharmaceutical firms that have won. There are transportation companies. There are all sorts of folks, especially online retailers. And the latest information available, one of those online retailers is in South Africa. South Africa's Takealot, the successor to Kalahari.net and others. But South Africa's Takealot saw sales in the six-month period ending 30 September 2020 rise by 41%, with an additional $238 million in sales. Once again, a winner while others lose. Now, that's not to attack Takealot. They have a good business model. It's working well for them. But the point is, someone will always win in every crisis. In conflict, it's the undertakers that win, about the only ones. Avocado farming is on the rise in Africa. With trees that last an average of 50 years, it could provide a lifetime of income for many Africans. In East Africa, this has become an important phenomenon, as well as in other parts of the continent. And just to give you an idea of the scale of things, the U.S. avocado market alone grew by 406% between 1990 and 2017. 406%. So if you're looking for a ready market to ship avocados, there's one right here. And that's the U.S. alone. Global avocado consumption has also been up significantly. Additional news from across the continent. Somalia's parliament voted unanimously to rescind the two-year extension to President Mohamed's term, which they approved just a month ago. This in the wake of additional violence in Somalia. The parliament voted unanimously to rescind his two-year extension, which puts the situation in Somalia into yet more turmoil. What happens now? We have an election that was just postponed. We shall see. Minnesota National Guard troops have returned home after an 11-month deployment to Combined Joint Task Force Horn of Africa, CJTF HOA, where they provided security and force protection for the task force at Camp Lemonnier, as well as in a couple other locations across East Africa. The 11-month deployment means that these troops, along with hundreds of thousands of other American troops, haven't been home to experience the chaos and lunacy taking place in Minneapolis. They will experience something quite different on the return to Minnesota. Google will offer 40,000 developer scholarships to Africa in a move that's likely to spark even more innovation across the continent of Africa and help draw a lot of African economies further into the digital age. 40,000 scholarships from Google for developers. SpaceX and NASA's Crew 1 astronauts have returned to Earth today, landing in the Gulf of Mexico and a successful return from orbit. And a breakthrough malaria vaccine is reportedly reached an efficacy rate of 77%, which exceeds the United Nations World Health Organization's target of 75%. if in fact this bears out to be true, this is a groundbreaking, remarkable development, and perhaps will begin to eliminate the scourge of malaria, which has afflicted human populations since the advent of agriculture roughly 10 to 12,000 years ago. Prior to that, it was something that never really seemed to be around. But it has been the scourge of humankind, particularly developing nations, and particularly in Africa. And so if this vaccine is effective at 77% efficacy, that would be quite a groundbreaker. There's been talk about this for months, but the story out today says that, in fact, it is true, 77% efficacy. And Kenyans have taken to the streets. They're angry. Not at President Kenyatta, not at the African Union, not at Al-Shabaab. They're angry at the International Monetary Fund. You're probably wondering, well, gee, what did the IMF do to them? Well, the IMF gave Kenya $2.34 billion. That's why Kenyans are angry. Kenyans have taken to the streets to protest the IMF giving money to a government they feel will misuse it. Interesting development there of people power. And sadly, in Myanmar, security forces have killed an additional 7 people today, the 2nd of May, 2021, in clashes with protesters in what is now a 3-month-long military coup, a country ruled by a military junta, which the world is simply doing virtually nothing concrete about, including the Manchurian cadaver, who is busy admonishing Americans to do patriotic things like put things on your face. Yeah, but nothing being done about Myanmar. Perhaps it shows the limits of great power in the 21st century, or it just shows the ignorance of certain administrations. Australia is blocking all incoming traffic, all travelers from India for a period of at least 12 days. All travelers from India are banned from coming to Australia in response to the growing pandemic in India. In addition, Australia will fine its own citizens $66,000 Australian dollars if they come home from India during this lockdown somehow. That's about $50,000 US. What is the purpose of the government of Australia? Is it to oppress its people? Or is it to govern the polity with their consent? How do you not let a citizen return home? Can they not quarantine when they come back? Australia's lost its mind. Absolutely lost its mind. Someone needs to take a close look at what's happening in the halls of Parliament in Canberra and in that administration. Dozens of German police were injured in protest on May Day with people all over the country. Specifically in Berlin, 93 police officers were injured and 354 protesters were arrested in Berlin alone as a consequence of May Day protest. Of course, May Day is famously Labor Day, something celebrated by socialists and trade unions and communists the world over, loving May Day, speaking of the word labor out there. And it tends these days to be, since socialists and communist regimes have failed by the dozens, after their repressive behavior proved to be non-conducive to commerce and human conduct, we see that people still use the day as a day of protest. And there were protests throughout Europe, in Brussels, in London, in Paris, in Berlin yesterday, all protesting the expansion of state control and the erosion of individual liberty and collective liberty. And in the clashes in Berlin, 93 police officers injured. The German Interior Minister said that the protest is allowed, but people shouldn't be attacking police. Well, I agree with that wholeheartedly. Nonviolent protest is fine, but violence is not necessary, and it should be punished. So there you have it, folks. There you have it. Those are the headlines. Let me go ahead and get to the stories now, start talking about them, give you a little in-depth analysis on what we've got going on today around the world. As I mentioned, President Cyril Ramaphosa remains in the headlines just a couple days after his appearance before the Zondo State Capture Commission in South Africa. You know that commission, the commission that seems to never end. It's been going on for well on nigh a decade now, and it continues. But Ramaphosa says that he's focused on the poor and unemployed class of South Africans. It's at the top of his mind. This is when he spoke to COSATU after his Zondo Commission appearance. He did that in Bromfontein on Saturday, May 1st, Labor Day. There you go. ANC President Cyril Ramaphosa has called on workers to continue to lead the fight against the pandemic and participate in the Sisonke vaccination drive. Okay. His May Day statement, he said, poor, unemployed, and working class South Africans were top of his mind, which leads one to believe, where are the rest of South Africans at? Nowhere in his mind or his consciousness? I think that's a fair question. What's on your mind, Cyril? I honestly don't believe the poor and unemployed are on his mind. If they were, we'd see different outcomes. But response to Ramaphosa's Zondo Commission appearance and his May Day statements are not exactly being received with the warmest and heartiest of welcomes around South Africa. The Daily Maverick published this op-ed in which they say, like a cat on a hot tin roof, Ramaphosa danced his way through the Zondo Commission. Yes, this one by Ferial Hafiji from the Daily Maverick. And one would have to agree. A little sexy picture there of the president of South Africa, that drawing. Yes. Ramaphosa acknowledged that corruption put the ANC on the road to electoral defeat. When polls started coming in ahead of the local government elections back in 2016, the ANC realized corruption had become a problem. Really? It took them that long? President Ramaphosa told the Commission of Inquiry into State Capture this past week. That's what he told them. Then the results came and the party lost control of both economic heartland metro of Johannesburg and the political capital metro of Pretoria and Durban. And they already lost Cape Town, so they'd lost a lot. That's kind of a limited statement there. Corruption leads to a breakdown of party morality and the ANC becomes less attractive. It leads to lost electoral support. If we don't do something, we're on a one-way ticket to oblivion and defeat, he said on the second day of testimony at the state capture and his role in addressing it. Well, I submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, the issue here is not morale in the African National Congress. Who cares about morale within a political party? What we care about are South Africans. And the sooner you folks move away from believing the party is more important than the people, the healthier South Africa will be. This is the crux, the root of all of the misery in South Africa today. They can blame it on apartheid. They can blame it on racism. They can blame it on white monopoly capital. They can blame it on anything they want. But this cancer on South Africa is the post-independence ANC, a party that had some significant contributions during liberation, even though it was banished to the dustbin of history from 1962 until about 1980. That 18-year period, it virtually non-existent. Others filled the void. But the party did make contributions to liberation struggle. But today, this vile, disgusting, thieving kleptocracy is a stain on South Africa. And the fact that they still talk and worry most about the fact about their party, their political party, shows you how little they care about the poor and unemployed in South Africa, whether they're the black, white, brown, or otherwise. But Ramaphosa remains in the headlines. Yep. And this from News 24 with an interesting op-ed. News 24 says, "Don't be fooled by Ramaphosa. The ANC knew everything early on and chose to do nothing." That by Peter Du Toit. Indeed, they did. They chose to do nothing. 2 days of testimony before the Zondo Commission, Ramaphosa tried to give the impression that the party learned about corruption during that time frame. But they knew well before this. Remember, Ramaphosa was the deputy president. He's also the guy on the board of the Platinum Company responsible for calling out the police at Marikana, leading to deaths of many people. And the proposed method to fleece yet more money from the talented and accomplished and successful by taking more income taxes or wealth taxes away from wealthy South Africans will simply lead to the loss of yet more resources in a country that desperately needs foreign direct investment, and it certainly needs to retain the talent and money that it has now. But people are leaving South Africa in droves. Over 4,200 millionaires have departed the country since 2010. Since 2010, 4,200. Many countries attempt to recover from the fallout of the pandemic. The introduction of wealth tax has become an increasingly popular solution to tackle this, including here in America, where the Manchurian cadaver intends to fleece 43% of our income. It's already getting that much, so I don't know how much more he wants. South Africa has become the latest country rumored to introduce a wealth tax, with a recent study by the World Inequality Lab demonstrating that the tax could generate up to $160 billion or $10.7 billion. True. But at what cost? With South Africa having lost 1,900 millionaires just in the past year, except 4,200, how much money must flee? Can you not see the example of New York City and what New York City has done, destroying a once prosperous, healthy, safe, productive, vibrant, multi-ethnic city? Now it's just a disaster. It might as well be a city in the developing world, with no law enforcement, people being shot in broad daylight, shops being broken into, a mayor that's clearly clueless about what he's doing and full of self-bloviating opinion of himself. People have fled New York in droves. Where have they gone? Sunny climes, where people not only have to have the ability to invest and live their lives, but they don't have to deal with the oppressive state like we saw in New York City. South Africa should take a note from what's been happening there. Absolutely. And this new law in South Africa is going to create a very bizarre situation for anyone in South Africa. It's likely to drive away investment even further. The Amendment to the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act is supposed to provide greater access protection for people who challenge unfair discrimination. But there's two things the bill is going to do. It proposes to amend the definition of discrimination to make it clear that discrimination isn't just someone taking action against someone. It is not necessary for a person to act with intention before they can be found guilty of unfair discrimination. So you don't even have to have the intent to discriminate against someone under this bill. Some bureaucrat simply says, you discriminated. Some judge says, you discriminated. Even if you had no intention of discriminating, there was no intent to it. You will be punished as an individual and as a corporation. Who in their right mind would invest in a country like this? I ask you, who in their right mind? Additionally, it will make employers liable for unfair discrimination committed by their employees. Are you serious? So are we now going to see endless lawsuits in South Africa because someone working at a shop was angry and said something inappropriate? Now the employer is responsible for what comes out of their employee's mouth? This is ludicrous beyond belief. Orwell, George Orwell, couldn't write this kind of fictional story. Unfortunately, it's true. Just like United Kingdom, where they banned demonstrations. You can't have demonstrations in the United Kingdom. What planet are these people on? This is a very unhealthy path, ladies and gentlemen. This is an unhealthy path. Historically, we've seen what happens when governments become so repressive. If it's a few governments like Iran and North Korea who own the keys to the palace and control things, they can get away with it. But when governments across Europe and across the world become repressive, eventually there is a price that's paid, either in the loss of freedom and life of the citizens or the removal of that oppressive government. Not the right path, South Africa. Not the right path. You can't legislate what's in people's minds. I know you want to try, but you cannot do that. It simply does not work. The price of petroleum is at a record high in South Africa. This from the ruling African National Congress, which sets the price of petroleum. They control it. It's price controlled. There's no difference. You pay the same everywhere in the country, which defies market logic and capitalism. But it's not capitalist. It's a state-controlled economy in many respects. Like many countries, the government of South Africa controls the price of petrol, or gasoline for those of you here in the U.S. and North America. The price of petrol now has reached an all-time high, but the price of oil hasn't reached an all-time high. How is it that oil, which was $175 a barrel not all that long ago, is only $60 or $70 a barrel, yet the price of petrol in South Africa has reached an all-time high under the ruling African National Congress? Because the state takes 65%, and it's one way for them to make money. Since the economy is collapsing, people still need to transport around, get goods around, and they've got a fixed place where they can steal from your pocket. And that's exactly what they're doing, stealing from your pocket. And I know of what I'm talking. I live in a state here in the United States that has the highest individual state tax on petrol. We have a federal tax, which is not unreasonable. And then we have a state tax and another state tax. And in Pennsylvania, we pay more in taxes than any other state in the union. I can drive an hour south of here, and when I cross the border and get to the town an hour south of here, the price of petrol is 40 to 60 cents a gallon less. So about 20 cents a liter less than it is right here. And why is that? Because my money goes to the Pennsylvania government. And what do they do with it? They maintain a toll road that was paid for 50 years ago and charge me a ridiculous amount of money to travel on that toll road. Ostensibly, it's to fix roads and highways. But how about some transparency on that one? And the same for South Africans. 65% of the price you pay at the pump is going directly to the coffers of the African National Congress. 30 years ago, the African National Congress, out of power and now no longer banned, complained that petrol prices established by the National Party were racist because it impoverished black Africans. Well, what the hell do you call this? Record prices, the highest they've ever been in South Africa. Yet petrol is only about one-third of its peak. So something is going on here, and they're fleecing money out of your pockets, ladies and gentlemen. Right out of your pockets. Unbelievable. 35% of the price you pay at the pump is for the fuel. The rest is the cost of petrol goes towards taxes and levies. Wow. So that 35% includes pumping it, refining it, transporting it, delivering it, paying the salaries of the petrol station attendants and paying the salaries, the electricity. That's 35% is all it costs. You could put money in South Africans' pockets today by simply eliminating the tax on petrol. The billions of rand that would flow into the pockets and benefit the economy would be amazing. But no, that's not going to happen with the ANC. Takealot is one of the big winners when it comes to the pandemic sweepstakes, having raked in a 41% increase last year just in the last in their last six-month reporting period. $238 million that was their sales in the period that ended 30 September. That's a 41% jump from the previous year. Takealot has really benefited immensely, as have other online shopping platforms. And as I mentioned, avocados are on the rise in Africa. This is from Deutsche Welle. Interesting story here. Green gold, avocado farming on the rise in Africa. In East Africa and Nigeria, avocado farmers want to enter the insatiable export market. Environmental concerns cast a shadow over the crop in other parts of the world. What will African farmers do differently? Probably nothing. Destroy the environment just like everybody else. Baker Sengendo's vision for the future of Uganda starts with an avocado seedling. The avocado tree has a lifespan of about 50 years. The life expectancy of an average Ugandan is about 60 years. A tree can benefit them their entire life. He works on a 1,000-hectare or 2,470-acre Musubi farm in Nansana, central Uganda. By working in avocado farming, I'm fulfilling my life dream. We want to lift our communities out of poverty. As I mentioned, demand in the U.S. alone from between 1990 and 2017 grew by 406%. It's fascinating, folks. When I was a young man, avocado was incredibly expensive. It was a rare treat if you could afford to get it and, you know, ask for it in a restaurant. They usually surcharge you. Then I went to Africa. People were eating avocados all over the place. It was just commonplace. It's kind of like sugar. It was not that expensive. And then I came back and it had adapted here because the market had grown so much, the price had come down. So now it's just an everyday treat, avocados. But I caution Africans, you need to move up the value chain. Continually produce commodities is not the future. It's not the answer. It is part of a diverse economy, but it cannot be the sole pillar upon which your prosperity rests, or you will rise and fall with commodity prices, which whether there are capital or social markets around the planet, capitalism, socialism, it doesn't matter. Prices rise and fall with demand, even in demand and controlled economies. In Somalia, the parliament has rescinded its previous decision to extend President Mohamed's term by 2 years. Just a month after they extended it, they have rescinded it. Somali lawmakers voted unanimously on Saturday to cancel 2-year presidential term extension they had approved last month after clashes in the capital Mogadishu between factions of the security forces, which are divided over this political issue. Somalia just never seems to want to come right, ladies and gentlemen. It's absolutely crazy, this country. Decades of misery. And the only thing Somalia has done is export piracy and people all over the world, some of whom come to this country and cause utter chaos with a complete misunderstanding of what a democracy and a representative republic are, running for Congress and getting seated. Yeah. And others make great contributions in migrating to the United Kingdom, becoming world-class long-distance runners like Mo Farah. He's a Sudanese telecoms titan. Mo Farah. Brilliant runner. And a great Brit. The Minnesota National Guard has returned home after an 11-month deployment to the Horn of Africa. It's a big day for friends and family for some Minnesota National Guard members. They returned home this Saturday from Africa after being gone for almost a year. The last few minutes almost seem to be the hardest because it's so close, but yet not yet here, said Rebecca Rankin, wife of a National Guard soldier, Lieutenant Colonel Chip Rankin. Members of the Minnesota National Guard were escorted from the airport back to Rosemont. The pandemic changed the timeline for the deployment. For the last three deployments, obviously our families were able to do this with us to the very end. Departure ceremony, in-person events. So unfortunately, this year with the pandemic, the start of our mission, we had to do everything virtual. And then we had to start 15 days ahead so we could have a quarantine period. Usually it's about 9 months, but Saturday marks 11 months since they left home. Of course, they're providing force protection to the Combined Joint Task Force of Horn of Africa and also doing some select missions in other countries in the region. Google is offering 40,000 scholarships to Africa in an interesting development. They announced the launch of 40,000 developer scholarships in Africa. They'll offer scholarships created in partnership with tech talent companies Pluralsight and Undela to developers spread across mobile and cloud development tracks. According to the statement released by the company, Google gives scholarships with certifications in Android and cloud development to the top 1,000 students, beginner and intermediate developers at the end of the training. So Google, along with Twitter and Amazon, are going not all in, but they're definitely putting a focus on Africa, which is interesting. Apparently, they've been listening to Chris Wyatt, because Chris Wyatt's been telling people if you don't get involved in Africa as an American corporation, by 2050, we'll be a second-rate economic power. That's where the growth is coming, in Africa. It's absolutely coming. You can deny it, but that doesn't make it untrue. And today, the SpaceX NASA Crew 1 astronauts return to Earth in a successful redeployment back to the planet. This is from Jackie Waddles, CNN Business. SpaceX Crew Dragon capsule soared back from outer space Sunday morning, made a parachute landing in the Gulf of Mexico, returning 4 astronauts from a record-setting mission to the International Space Station. The astronauts, NASA's Michael Hopkins, Victor Glover, Shannon Walker, and Soichi Noguchi with Japan Space Agency boarded the Crew Dragon capsule Friday afternoon. They spent all night aboard the 13-foot-wide, fully autonomous capsule as it conducted a series of engine burns and maneuvers to prepare for its reentry. Wow, 13 feet across, and they spent the whole night there. That had to be a bit confined quarters. There you go. There's a picture of them right there. And they safely landed in the Gulf of Mexico. Fired up its engines, sliced back to Earth's thick inner atmosphere around 2 a.m. Eastern time. The capsule deployed a series of billowing parachutes to slow its descent before splashing down off the coast of Panama City, Florida at 2:56 in the morning. Well, I wasn't up for that, so that'd be one of the SpaceX missions I missed. 2:56, I was not getting up for that one. So anyway. And in other news, fascinating news, a unprecedented, unparalleled development in the fight against malaria, the parasite that causes debilitating illness and death, particularly of those under the age of five. It's a slate wiper for a lot of kids under the age of five. The World Health Organization, United Nations, say that the efficacy of the latest vaccine is 77%. Against malaria. That is a game changer if, in fact, it is true. Malaria has been the scourge of humankind, along with smallpox, which was virtually eradicated back in the late 1970s. But malaria remains a scourge of mankind, but it's mostly in developing countries. Hence, it's been a neglected disease for a long time. Yep. There you go. So this is the first time the vaccine has shown efficacy in trials preventing disease, 77% of the time among those receiving it. It's a landmark achievement, as I said. The World Health Organization sets a target of 75% efficacy for a vaccine. So clearly, this is very promising. As I mentioned, Kenyans are angry. Not at the president. Well, they're probably mad at the president. They're angry at the International Monetary Fund for giving them money. Yes, can you believe that? Well, it's because they know that their government will misuse the money. That's what they're concerned about. So Kenyans are furious with the IMF over billions more in loans. Kenyans are petitioning the International Monetary Fund to cancel its approval of a $2.34 billion loan for Kenya, citing mismanagement of funds by the government and the country's increasing debt load. Wow. Earlier this month, as I reported here on Chris White Africa, Kenya got a $2.34 billion three-year loan facility from the IMF, and now citizens are angry. Using the hashtag stop loaning Kenya and hashtag stop giving Kenya loans, wow, there is a push by private citizens to get Kenya to not take this money. Fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. Peaceful protest, unlike what was happening in Berlin, apparently. So well done to the Kenyans. Maybe their government will take notice. Probably not. And sadly, Myanmar, the security forces have killed yet another 7 people today in now the 3-month crisis of a country run by a military junta, which overthrew its government. Sad and tragic indeed. And the world is barely paying attention to this, folks. I had to scour far and wide to find any news reporting about events in Myanmar today. It was a front page story throughout February, but now it is simply not talked about. Myanmar security forces opened fire on some of the biggest protests against military rule in days this Sunday, today, killing 7 people. 3 months after the coup plunged the country into chaos. It is very disturbing how quiet the global powers are when it comes to what's happening in Myanmar. They seem quite castrated and eunuch-like in their approach to dealing with this scourge of a military junta in Myanmar. Australia will block all arrivals from India for at least 12 days. The Australian government will soon be blocking travelers from entering the country if they have set foot in India 14 days before departing the flight towards Australia. There's a temporary pause owing to the worsening pandemic in India. And it comes into effect Monday, May 3rd at midnight. It is currently, let's see what it is in Sydney. It is 2:30 in the morning already. So it's already in effect. It's already May 3rd. This went into effect 2.5 hours ago. And no one from India can travel to Australia. And the official statement from the government of Australia says, the government does not make these decisions lightly. However, it's critical to the integrity of the Australian public health and quarantine systems is protected and the number of cases in quarantine facilities is reduced to a magnitude level, to a manageable level, Wow. So not only are they doing that, as reported by Simple Flying, but here's what they're also doing. The Hill is reporting that Australia will fine its own citizens $66,000 Australian if they fly home from India. Seriously? So Australia is imposing fines of $66,000 if its citizens fly home from India amid a massive spike in cases in the South Asian country. Australian Health Minister Greg Hunt said in a statement on Saturday that the government is issuing temporary pause on travel from India if a person has been to India for 14 days. According to the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, those who violate the ban could face up to $66,000 fine, $50,000 US, 5 years in prison, or both. Excuse me? You have a duty to Australian citizens, not to your government. When are these governments going to wake up? Put a person in prison for 5 years? That's insane. People who smoke damage our health. Are you going to put smokers in prison next? Drunk drivers endanger our health and our lives. Are you just going to lock people up for having one drop? Wow. Talk about an oppressive state. Talk about an oppressive state. Unbelievable what's going on there. As I mentioned, in Berlin, dozens of people, dozens of police officers, 94 police officers were injured in clashes on May Day, which went into the night on May 1st in Berlin and many other cities across Europe. Brussels, the same sort of thing happened. 94 police were injured, 93 police were injured, and 354 protesters were detained during traditional May Day rallies. More than 20 different rallies took place in the German capital on Saturday. The vast majority of them were peaceful. However, a leftist march of 8,000 people to the city's Neukölln and Kreuzberg neighborhood, which has often seen clashes in the past, turned violent. Protesters threw bottles and rocks at officers and burned garbage containers and wooden pallets on the streets. Violence against police officers and a blind, destructive rage has nothing to do with political protests, Berlin State Interior Minister Andreas Geisel said. Well, I agree with you. Absolutely. But, look what the source of this was. Leftists. Is that a surprise? Not at all. Violence is something they know quite well. That is something that they know all too well. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the news headlines from today, the 2nd of May, 2021, here on Indaba African News of the Day. Appreciate you tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the news and analysis of events from around the world. Thank you for tuning in.